The phrase politics stops at the water's edge has not aged all that well.
There are fundamental differences between the Republican and Democratic candidates.
We'll look at the divides in how President Trump and Joe Biden view foreign policy. And Europe's coronavirus experience has often been a preview of what Americans will deal with. So we'll go there to see how the second COVID-19 wave is going. Plus, new questions and new moves cast doubt on the complicated talks over the fate of TikTok. It is Thursday, September 24th. I'm Mark Garrison with The Wall Street Journal, and this is What's News. Two Louisville police officers were shot last night during protests sparked by a grand jury decision in the killing of Breonna Taylor. The officers were receiving treatment at a hospital.
Breonna Taylor! Breonna Taylor!
Mostly peaceful protests were held in several cities, including Chicago and Pittsburgh. People took to the streets after the Kentucky Attorney General announced that police officers involved in the fatal shooting of Breonna Taylor were not charged in connection with her killing. One former detective will face charges related to endangering her neighbors when executing a search warrant on Taylor's apartment 6 months ago. President Trump said yesterday that the Supreme Court may need to ultimately decide the results of the election, another reason he wants to quickly fill the vacancy left by the death of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. He also said he wouldn't commit to a peaceful transfer of power.
Get rid of the ballots and you'll have a very peaceful. There won't be a transfer, frankly. There'll be a continuation. The ballots are out of control. You know it.
Research shows ballot fraud is rare, and there's no evidence that mail-in voting favors either party. Joe Biden responded to the president's comments overnight.
What country are we in? Look, he says the most irrational things. I don't know what to say about it, but it doesn't surprise me.
The future of TikTok is officially in the hands of the Chinese government. TikTok's parent company ByteDance says it is seeking approval from Beijing for the complicated deal that would turn TikTok into a U.S.-based company. Chinese authorities said they had received an application from ByteDance but haven't officially commented on the White House-endorsed partnership that would see Oracle and Walmart take major stakes in the video-sharing app. Back in the U.S., TikTok is asking a federal judge to stop the Trump administration from banning it. The Justice Department defended the government's moves. There's a hearing set for this morning. California is banning the sale of new gas-powered cars starting in 2035 in a big push to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and accelerate adoption of electric vehicles. It's the first American state to commit to this. The move could influence other states to set their own deadlines. We're reporting that J.P. Morgan Chase is close to a settlement that could be around $1 billion. It involves investigations by U.S. regulators into what's called spoofing. In regulatory filings, J.P. Morgan has said it was cooperating with investigators. Markets reporter Anna Isaac explains what spoofing means generally and why it's important.
So spoofing is essentially a way of bluffing in markets. It's a way of entering bogus orders and then quickly cancelling them. And it's very hard to spot, especially as there's many, many more trades that get cancelled by algorithms now. So it's very hard to see whether or not this is a real trade that's going on or whether it's not. And it can distort markets because it's orders typically sent in a very large volume on one side of the market that are quickly cancelled, and they can change the picture of supply and demand. So you're distorting and manipulating prices in markets. And regulators have said that they want to crack down on it because it undermines trust and integrity in markets. It's a very easy way to massively distort areas such as options or derivatives markets.
This morning, we'll get the latest data on new unemployment filings. And just ahead, a closer look at the future of America's foreign policy, depending on who wins the presidential election. In our ongoing election coverage, we're taking a deep look at how President Trump and Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden differ on major policy issues. Today, we're going to examine foreign affairs. Mark Stewart spoke with the Journal's national security reporter, Warren Strobel.
A lot of attention in recent days to the Middle East. Obviously, President Trump is touting some success with peace accords with Israel. Let's talk about the Trump approach versus the Biden approach.
Yeah, I mean, in the waning weeks of the campaign here, Mr. Trump has secured some really historic agreements from the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain to make peace with Israel and recognize it diplomatically. Big achievement, no matter how you count it, I think most people would agree. But there are fundamental differences between the Republican and Democratic candidates, particularly when it comes to Saudi Arabia. Mr. Biden has said that he would review relations with Saudi Arabia, which is probably the most important U.S. ally in the Middle East, that he would consider stopping arms sales. He's been very critical of their killing of the journalist and dissident Jamal Khashoggi. Mr. Trump, on the other hand, has declined to put pressure on Saudi Arabia really in any significant way. He sort of dismissed the finding by the CIA that Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman probably ordered the killing of Mr. Khashoggi, and he has vetoed congressional moves to limit arms sales to Riyadh.
Saudi Arabia, obviously an issue in the Middle East, but also Iran. Let's talk about the different approaches there.
Yeah, and here again, there's quite a stark difference. Mr. Trump, I believe it was 2017, withdrew from the Iran nuclear accord, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, and he has launched a campaign of maximum pressure designed to limit Iran's ability to cause trouble in the region and try to force it back into talks. He's also, by the way, in recent days, Mr. Trump has said, you know, if I get reelected, Iran will come to the table and we can make a deal real quickly. Mr. Biden has said he would go back into the nuclear agreement. He would get the United States back into that agreement if Iran also returns to compliance. So again, Joe Biden is tough on Iran, but he is much more, I think, looking at a diplomatic track to try and halt their nuclear program.
Another region of interest is certainly Europe. Obviously, there are economic issues there, political as well as military issues. When we look at Europe, how big of a role does the relationship with NATO play in this discussion?
You know, I think it plays a significant role. NATO is probably the most important and one of the longest standing alliances that the United States has. Important economically in terms of the trade between the United States and Europe, and important strategically given its role in sort of countering Russia intervention in places like Ukraine and Belarus. Again, there's differences here, though. Mr. Trump has been pretty critical of NATO. He has demanded that all the countries live up to a promise they made to spend 2% of their GDP on their own self-defense. And there have been rumors that he might withdraw from NATO entirely or want to. This has drawn a lot of criticism from Mr. Biden, who, again, stressed the importance of good alliances with Europe and other parts of the world.
You briefly mentioned Russia. Where are the distinctions in viewpoint and policy between the two candidates?
That's a good question. I think the Trump administration has been, in terms of my reporting and analysis, sort of a weird beast when it comes to Russia. Mr. Trump himself is, you know, has been quite friendly with and trying to strike a good relationship with Vladimir Putin. But the people in the middle and upper levels of U.S. government agencies are taking a much more dim view of Mr. Putin. And actually, the U.S. has done a lot of sanctions and other actions against Putin during Mr. Trump's term. So there's sort of a kind of a bipolar aspect to his administration's dealings with Russia. Mr. Biden, I think, has been more critical of Putin personally and has said he would stand up to Mr. Putin on things such as election interference, the Russian incursion into Ukraine, and other things like that.
Warren Strobel, thank you for taking time to outline the differences between these different approaches. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
If you want to know more about how the candidates differ on other major policy issues, including a deep dive on China and its neighbors, we've got a special Election 2020 page on WSJ.com. And finally, COVID-19 developments in Europe sometimes give a preview of what America may face. So our reporters across the continent are watching to see how countries there are handling a second wave of coronavirus. Governments are largely trying to avoid a return to nationwide lockdowns, a blunt approach that also causes brutal economic pain. Our reporter Javier Fontegloria is in Spain.
We're seeing across Europe, I would say, lockdowns that are much milder than the ones we saw in spring. They're basically implementing targeted measures to different cities where there are hotspots, for example, in Madrid, which is, I would say, the biggest hotspot in Europe. You see how they've cordoned different quarters, different neighborhoods, and people, they can't go out, come in and come out from those neighborhoods unless they have to go to work, to go to the doctor, to buy groceries, or to take the kids to school, for example. So, of course, measures have been reinforced or heightened, but it's not as it was in spring.
New lockdown measures can be disruptive and confusing for people. One of the latest COVID-19 measures the UK has put in place is a limit on gatherings to six people. That may sound simple enough, but it turns out the rule of six is not, and it's causing confusion, stress, and raising doubt about how to properly participate in that most British ritual of visiting the pub. Max Colchester is our UK political correspondent.
The reaction has been one of general bemusement, A, over whether the rule actually works, and B, over how best to sort of adhere to it. There's been many people wondering how they should go about meeting with friends, whether it's better to go meet them in a crowded pub as opposed to at home, or whether they can still see their extended family in large numbers, whether it's okay to be outside or inside. One of the problems is that this rule isn't uniform across the United Kingdom. In Scotland, for instance, you're now banned from meeting friends indoors, whereas in England you can. In Scotland, the rule of six doesn't apply to children. In England, it does. So there's a whole load of caveats which makes this rule very complicated. And the irony, of course, is that the British government introduced this rule with the aim of making adherence to COVID guidelines simpler, which, frankly, it hasn't proved to be.
And that's What's News for Thursday. We're back tonight with an updated show. If you like us, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Mark Garrison with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.